Listening to the Marty Leeds Mathemagical Radio Hour, where we discuss myth, math, spirituality, philosophy, and much, much more. www.thesyncbook.com. Cheerio, my good people. Welcome once again to the show. I'm your host, Marty Leeds. We got a great show for you tonight, so thanks for tuning in. Just a few announcements before we get started here. To let everyone know, the host of the Middle Chamber, Freighter X, has decided to leave the Sync Book for his own personal reasons. So that show will no longer be available via the Sync Book site for download. They will be starting their own site. I'm not sure all the information on that as of yet, but you'll still be able to get the Middle Chamber. He's just going to be doing it on his own from now on. From what I gather, Freighter felt like the aims of the Sync Book no longer really reflected his own, which I personally respect and hold no grudges or have any ill will towards him at all. I wish both Freighter and Mater much happiness in the future. Just to let everyone know, there's no unified front here at the Sync Book. The Sync Book is just an artist collective. It's just a bunch of people brought together under the general guise or the general recognition of synchronicities in the world. I'm new to this network. This is only my 10th podcast here, and I've only really decided to join them because simply I think everyone involved is just super cool and really nice. That's about it. No grand conspiracy, no ulterior motives, no unified front, as I was saying. I'm a student of synchronicity myself, and I think it is an uber important study. But ultimately, I love the company. I love the people who continue to put out good material, and I appreciate the community and the network of creative individuals. So I got to meet a lot of these guys at the Sync Summit and got along with everyone wonderfully. Alan Green is a sweetheart of an individual. Doug and Will over at 42 Minutes are great. I think both David Plate and Andras are smart dudes and have really unique perspectives on the world. And, and that said, I probably disagree with these guys on a whole slew of topics when it comes right down to it. But personally, I feel like disagreements are often quintessential to push the boundaries of our own understanding. And voicing varying opinions on hot or controversial topics, if you will, is important in the learning process. It's extremely important. So Freighter and Mater, all the best to you. Much love and continued success in your future endeavors. And just let everyone know, Freighter X will eventually be coming on the show here in the future. So look for that. So. Once again, please, if you get the chance, drop by iTunes and leave a review of the show so people can get a grasp of the sort of wide-ranging and quality material covered on this show. And please help me out by spreading the word and sharing this via your social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, all that. Just to let everyone know, a lot of people at the Sync site have been working extra hard at editing and uploading the video content from the Sync Summit. There's a lot of material that's going to be going up over the next couple weeks/months, so check back and stay tuned for that. I know my speech is already up, and James Evan Pilato, his thing on Tapped Out, the Simpsons sync is up, so check that out. It's a really good speech. I also have a few really exciting things in the works right now as far as upcoming conferences for myself that I will be sharing in the next couple of months once things get a little bit more solidified and concretized, so stay tuned for that. Alrighty, let us get on with the show. Tonight's guests are poet Holly McNish, and the musical guest is Portland, Oregon's Otis Heat. This show is brought to you by the Sync Book Radio. Check out all the wonderful podcasts. 42 Minutes, Always Record, and Synchronize. More information about Sync Book Press, Sync Book Radio, and Sync Book events can be found at www.thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends and please support it by becoming a donor. You'll find the donation links under each episode on the website and consider setting up a monthly charge as it helps us keep the lights on and helps keep our microphones humming. And as always, thank you for your support.
He said those goddamn Pakistanis and their goddamn corner shops. Built a shop on every corner, took our British workers' jobs. He said those goddamn Chinese and their goddamn China shops. I told him they're from Vietnam, but he didn't give a toss. I ask him what was there before the damn Japan man shop. He looks at me and dreams a scene of British workers' jobs. Of full-time, full employment before the goddamn boats all came, where everybody went to work for full-time, full weeks, every day. A British business stood there first, he claims, before the Irish came. Now British people lost their jobs and bloody Turkish there to blame. I ask him how he knows that fact. He said, because it's true. I ask him how he knows it's fact. He said he read it in the news. Every time a Somalian comes here, they take a job from us. The mathematics, one for one, from us to them, it just adds up. He bites his cake. He sips his brew. He says again he knows the plot. The goddamn Caribbeans came and now good folk here don't have jobs. I ask him what was there before the goddamn Persian curtain shop. I show him architecture's plans of empty goddamn plots of land. I show him the historic maps, a bit of sand, a barren land. There was no goddamn shop before that Pakistani came and planned. Man, I am sick of crappy mathematics, because I love a bit of sums. I spent years into economics and I geek out over calculus. And when I meet these paper claims that one of every new that came takes away one's daily wage, I desperately want to scream your maths is stuck in primary. Because some who come here also spend, and some who come here also lend, and some who come here also tend to set up work which employs them. And all your balance sheets and trends, they work with numbers, not with men. And all this goddamn heated talk ignores the trade the Polish brought. Ignores the men they give work to, not plumbing jobs but further too. Ignores the guys they buy stock from, accountants, builders, on. And I know it's nice to have someone to blame our lack of jobs upon, but immigration's not that plain despite the sums inside our brains as one for one. As him for you. As if he goes home, they'd employ you. Because sometimes one that comes makes two, and sometimes one can add three more, and sometimes two times two is much, much more than four. And most times, immigrants bring more than minuses.
Our guest tonight is Holly McNish, and the poem you just heard is called Mathematics and is off her newly released album called Verses that you can get on iTunes as well as on her site www.hollypoetry.com, and Holly is spelled H-O-L-L-I-E. Holly is a UK poet who straddles the boundaries between the literary, poetic, and pop scenes. She was UK Slam Poetry Champion in 2009 and the first poet ever to record and perform at Abbey Road Studios in London. She has garnered titles like Chick of the Week from MTV, Internet Sensation and Best Daily. Poet Benjamin Zephaniah stated, "I can't take my ears off her," and her poem Embarrassed was enjoyed and tweeted to fans by renowned singer Pink. Holly has performed in venues as diverse as Glastonbury Festival, the Royal Albert Hall, Ronnie Scott's Jazz Bar, and has had poems appear on Radio 4, XFM, MTV, Channel 4, and BBC 2. She has had poems used in The Economist, Radio 4 Woman's Hour, The Dove Campaign for Real Beauty, and Channel 4 Random Acts. Holly currently runs a poetry and education organization called Page to Performance and is out on tour promoting her new record. So without further ado, let's get pious with Holly McNish. Holly, welcome to the show. I do appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to speak with me.
That's all right. It's lovely. It's lovely to speak to you. Thanks very much for asking me.
Yeah. Thanks for sending me a copy of your record. I listened to it two or three times now, and I absolutely loved it. I first heard of you, like a lot of people had, through your poem Mathematics, actually, which uh-huh. that went viral, and which I'm going to play prior to this interview to have people get a taste of your excellent work. Can I do a little introduction before the show, but do you want to give people a little rundown as to who you are and what you do and that sort of thing?
Yeah, totally. Okay, so my name's Holly McNish, and I do my poetry with a new album through Holly Poetry, will be the name for those releases. I work as a poet, basically, so I go all over the place with my poems, I write poems and I read them. I think it's quite a simple job, but it's quite a nice one. As well, something that I didn't really think I would be doing for the rest of my life.
So is this something you do full-time?
Yeah, I do it full-time now. I didn't. I gave up my day job about a year and a half ago. So I've been doing it full-time for a year and a half.
What was your day job?
My day job was working, doing the education program in an architecture center. So totally different. I was basically trying to get more young people involved in architecture and town planning, and I thought I would be doing that for a long time, but seems like not.
And so now you actually teach poetry as well, right?
Yeah, so I do workshops. I just did a, I don't know what it's called over the US, but I just did a workshop with 60 beavers and cubs here. Do you have that over there? Maybe not. But
No.
beavers and cubs, like scouts.
Oh, okay, sure.
Maybe,
Okay,
maybe it's a, yeah, so they're like the younger version of scouts. So I do sort of workshops in forests, writing poems in forests, and I go into schools and run kind of slam poetry days and do smaller workshops with groups of sort of 10 to 50 kids, or I just go into school sometimes and give an assembly and do some performance. So loads of different stuff. I love doing the workshops. It's one of the best parts of my job, I think.
How do the kids how do you interact with the kids? I mean, are they get into it quite a bit, or are they kind of
Yeah,
stand
they
up?
do. Not. Yeah, they do. They get worried about performing it. I never ever force people to read out their poems. It's all about kind of, writing it and getting things off your chest and telling your own story and saying what you want to say on the piece of paper. But I would never force anyone to read their poems out. I felt really nervous doing that myself, and it took me about 7 years. So the idea of trying to force a 15-year-old to read out a personal poem in front of their class is not something that I'm very into. But they do like it. When they hear that a poet's coming into school, they normally think it's going to be quite boring, and the teachers say they often moan that they're going to have to do poetry all day. But by the end of the day, most of them seem to be enjoying themselves. Not all of them. There's still some that I'm sure won't enjoy it, but most of them seem to enjoy it. I work quite a lot with a rapper over here called Inja, and that sets quite a good balance. He does some rapping, and that's a, having a male and a female person at the front as well is quite good. And we do some poetry with music and some without, and some free writing or freestyling, which I can't do, but he can. So it's nice.
So you just recorded at the infamous Abbey Road Studios, right? And you were the
Yeah.
first poet to record there, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. A bit,
That's
yeah, I'm still slightly shocked. But yeah, I was the first one to record and perform there, I
See
guess. Although, I don't know, poetry for me, songwriters, they kind of write poems, don't they? But they put it to music. So in a way,
Yeah,
there's been many
exactly.
poets there, but I'm the only official one. Yeah, that was a big deal for me. That was really, really nerve-wracking and very exciting. I started crying actually when I was performing, just to an audience of about 30 people. But had a sort of invite only kind of 30 people coming to watch a show at Abbey Road, and I saw one of my old school friends was there, and I started to cry halfway through a poem, which probably wasn't a very good thing to do, but never mind.
That's all right. So when you had the audience there at Abbey Road, was that the stuff that went onto your record?
No, I recorded in the morning, and then I did a kind of free gig for the first people that got back to me by email, basically. So yeah, I recorded in the morning and then did a gig. So that's the poems on the album are the ones that were recorded in the morning.
Oh, okay.
So
Sweet.
not live, not live. That might have been good though, apart from I'd have been crying on the album.
So I mean, obviously you've been doing this for quite a long time. So you played to probably you probably played in front or spoken in front of five people, and now you're playing like festivals and things like that, right? Or you're going to these. So
Yeah.
you've seen sort of the ebb and flow of like bigger audiences and stuff. I mean, you still have butterflies in your stomach when you or do you get nervous when you get on stage?
Yeah, totally. I find it so nerve-wracking. It doesn't really matter what size the audience is either. I think sometimes bigger audiences are less scary than if it's like a small, intimate room where you could see everybody's faces quite clearly. That's quite scary. But yeah, I'm not like I wasn't aiming to be a performer in life. So I think it would probably be different if I'd have gone through drama school or done lots of school plays even, or something where I'd been on the stage a lot. But I didn't. Like I studied French and German, then studied economics, and then was working in an office. Like
And then
I'm
you ended
not.
up on
I wouldn't
stage,
say
huh?
that. Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't say I'm a shy, like sometimes, but not generally a very shy person. But I'm not you know, I'm not a stagey person at all. So even now, after, I don't know, 6 years of reading poems out to other people, I still miss cues because I'm being sick in the toilets and stuff. It's ridiculous. But it's really nerve-wracking. And the more people know the poems, actually, I thought it would get easier, but it probably got harder because I feel like people expect something more now. So it's like, yeah, but it's very nerve-wracking.
It's so funny.
But it's worth it, I think.
Yeah, it's so funny you say that because watching you, it seems like you're very natural on stage. And it seems, I mean, how much of the connection, so much of the connection to the audience comes from the performance. Like, I mean, I'm a huge, like, lyric guy. I think that's what drew me to your poetry. I mean, I used to listen to, like, Anita Franco a lot, singer-songwriter over here. You know, it seems like, you know, you can get involved and ensconced in a performance, you know what I mean? And not even know, especially when you listen to music, and not even know what necessarily somebody's saying, you know what I mean? And it's almost like, how do I put this? Performance is such an interesting thing. It's like part of the poetry is in the performance, if you will. It's not only what is being said, but also how it's being delivered. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like when you were saying earlier about, like, rappers, a lot of times, like, when I listen to a lot of rap and things like, or hip hop or things like that, it's like a lot of times, you know, especially if they're speaking so fast, you don't even know what they're saying, but there's still that connection there. So
totally.
Yeah. So for you, I mean, is it when you deliver this stuff, obviously the words are very important, but where does the delivery come from for you, if you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. That's something that I sort of struggle with, to be honest, because I feel like the performance side of my poetry is not the best. But I try to imagine that I'm just talking to someone. That's what I try to imagine. I try to imagine that I'm talking to someone, like a friend or my mum or something like that, when I'm doing the poem. Mm-hmm. Because I hate the idea of putting on a performance or putting on a poetry voice. Or, like, lots of people in England, I don't know if it's the same in the US, but in England people talk about, oh, you put on a poetry voice. And I'm trying not to do that. So I just try to think of the audience as I'm sort of having a chat with them and just telling them my thoughts about stuff and reading out the poem as naturally as I can without letting the nerves overcome me, to be honest. I think I did a couple of sessions with the director to try and work on, I don't know, like, hand movements and stuff like that, but I just can't really do it. I prefer just getting up and sort of telling it like it is, trying to tell the story, talk to the audience, tell them the reason I wrote the poem, and then read the poem. I think that's kind of it. I like to keep it simple. I don't know if that makes for much of a stage show, but that's kind of where I'm at. I've tried to add stuff. I've tried to add sort of visuals and add music, but in the end, I quite like just watching poetry as poetry, just someone standing on the stage talking. A bit like storytelling, I guess. That's how I think of it. But storytelling, but not a natural story, because it's not fiction. Like, all the poems that I write, they're not in character or anything. They're just things that I've written about my life or about people I know. So yeah, I try to just pretend that I'm talking to a good friend, I guess.
So you don't imagine everybody in their underwear or anything like that, huh?
No, maybe I should though. Maybe I'll stop doing that.
things might get a little weird, right?
But I do try it. It's better since I've had a kid, actually, because I used to work myself up into a massive ordeal about it and get so nervous that I didn't really want to do it at all. And now I sort of think, you know, what is the worst that can happen? I'm not a brain surgeon. I'm not, you know, no one's life is relying on me reading this poem in a certain way. If I forget the words once in a while, it's you know, it's all right. No, nothing tragic is going to happen. There's enough tragedy going on for you not to be so worried about your poetry performance, I think.
Yeah. So have you, I mean, I've been a musician for several years, and I've had shows where I've been really, really great, and then I've had shows where I just bombed, you know, you just tanked. Have you had shows where things just went, you know, south? Maybe you had too much wine the night before or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I have. It's not generally to do with wine. Like, I can't drink before a gig, ever. I've not had a touch of alcohol before a gig. I always wait till I've finished and then I'm like, someone, can I get a glass of wine?
Give me some bubbly, huh?
Yeah, please, please, I want to drink now. But Yeah, well, I get it myself, obviously. Don't shout if someone's getting bombing. But yeah, I've had ones that have bombed. Sometimes I think, sometimes I expect them to bomb, and they actually tend to be the best ones. So I try to expect the worst now. I thought, I did a gig the other day, and it was at a church, and it was a sort of over 70s women's group, I guess, sort of women's and church meeting group. And I'd done some quite polite poems for a tour guide in Cambridge, and they asked me to do a gig. And I was really worried about that one, because I thought, I don't have many poems that aren't quite rude or swearing or kind of the way that I think and talk. And I really worried about that one. So I did some very polite poems to start off, but they actually bombed. No one wanted them. And then I sort of said one rude part of a poem, and everyone started laughing. I thought, actually, I've totally stereotyped you as being, you know, polite older ladies, but you just want the normal stuff. So that, it bombed at the beginning. And then when I actually just thought, you know, stop thinking of who the audience is and just do your poem, they seem to enjoy it better. I've had a few people heckle, but not that many. I think poetry audiences tend to be quite polite.
Yeah. More so than a punk rock show or something, right?
Yeah, maybe. Like, maybe I need to get out there onto different stages. I've had a few people heckle about the immigration poem, and I've done it in places where possibly people don't agree with it, which is, you know, I think that's good. If people are heckling and disagreeing with me, that's better than everyone always agreeing with everything I write about, I think. Otherwise, you're kind of preaching to the converted already.
Yeah. When you were saying, like, getting onto different stages, I mean, how do we integrate poetry back into the mainstream, if you will? Like you were saying, when you visit these kids, like their gut reaction is like, oh, we got to listen to poetry. But, and there's like a lot of this overarching cynicism or whatever to poetry. But to me, it seems like, you know, poetry is, I think I listened to an interview where you're talking about something about that. It's like, hey, you know, between a rock show or something like that, throw a poet up there for 10 or 20 minutes. It's like to entertain the audience, you know, now, like, how do we integrate that? Yeah.
I did that. I think people just need to take... I can't believe it doesn't happen in the US, to be honest.
Yeah, like, no kidding, right?
The leaders of this. Really good. I did it. I did one... there was like a local rock show with different bands. It was like a band competition night in our local nightclub. And they were going to have a compare between the bands. And I asked if they could put a poet up. And it worked really well, because it's like a 10-minute changeover for bands and setting all the music up on stage. So instead of just having a compere kind of chatting, or a comedian trying to make a few jokes in the middle of it, we just put a different poet up, and it worked really nicely. But it took a lot of effort to get them to do it, because they were like, oh, poetry, no, that, you know, thinking that a poet was going to come up and then all the audience would leave. have a bit of faith in the art form. I think it's not that I want it totally to go mainstream, because I think poetry is everywhere anyway. Like, every advert I see at the moment is using poets to put a poem about, I don't know, whatever it is, whatever the product is they're trying to sell. So it's kind of mainstream, but not in the actual arts arena, which is a bit sad. I think it's being used in loads of marketing and loads of company stuff. But it's getting there, though. Like, in the UK, most of the big festivals, they've started up poetry areas. And some hip hop groups are, you know, they're getting a poet to go up with them, and I think it's slowly getting there. Like, they've just had a thing on Channel 4, one of the big television stations in the UK, and they've started putting clips, like sort of 3-minute poetry clips on. It's still on very late at night, you know, sort of where the adverts used to be. But it's slowly working its way in, hopefully. Trying to, anyway.
Yeah, you know, when you say, you know, poetry isn't everything, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I mean, to me, you know, language itself seems like an art. And I mean, I've mentioned this on some podcasts before, but I read somewhere that supposedly 20,000 words in the English language were given to us by William Shakespeare, you know, who was, you know, one of the world's foremost poets. And so it would seem to me that, one of the best ways to use language and maybe even come to understand it is through poetry. And not sort of this, you know, mechanistic approach, if you will. And I mean, I often feel that whenever I read something that is written poetically, even if it's like maybe even sort of technical or whatever, it the poetry unveils the layers of meaning within every word and unearths this sort of the playfulness of language. You know, I mean, is that how you see language? Do you feel that there is an inherent poetry in language in and of itself?
Yeah, totally. Well, the way people speak, isn't it? Not that I don't really mean the way we sort of are strictly forced to write in schools, or the way that we have to write essays or kind of academic language, that kind of thing. But yeah, totally. I think the thing that gets me is whenever I go into schools, and it was the same with me, I didn't really like doing poetry in school, and I saw it as the hardest module to take. Like, really difficult. I found it really difficult. And at uni, I did French and German literature for like 3 years, and the only module I did not choose was poetry because I saw it as really complicated and really difficult.
That's
and now
funny.
That I write it, yeah, it's really, it's kind of annoying because it should be, it's like the freest form to use. And I know you have lots of different forms that you can write in, but at school, kind of creative writing, no one I see chooses to do poetry as part of that, as if, you know, story writing and prose writing is so much easier. When I go into schools, I try and emphasize the fact that poetry could, like, it can be anything. It's not structured. It doesn't have to rhyme. It doesn't have to have the same grammar forms. It doesn't have to have the same, you know, way of writing. You can write in any style. So I don't really understand why we're still at the point where kids see it as harder to write poems than to write prose. I don't really get why that is, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, is when are you writing all the time? I mean, is this something that you do just
all the time?
Okay.
Yeah, I write all the time. I've written since I was about 8, I think. I've written all my diaries and poems, always. I don't know why. Slightly obsessive. And lecture notes, even. Like, I think mathematics, the poem about immigration, I wrote after a lecture. So I started writing it in a lecture about the economy and immigration and jobs and stuff at uni, and then sort of finished it afterwards when I bumped into someone that was really anti-immigration. But yeah, I'm writing all the time. I don't share most of them. Like, there's a small percentage that I'll put on YouTube or put on my website or put in a book or whatever it is, whatever way you want to release your poetry. Most of it's still kind of hidden on my computer or in boxes under my bed. I don't know why, really.
How do you know when, since you have, as you were saying, you write a lot, I mean, how do you know when a poem is finished? How do you, you know what I mean? Is it a gut feeling, or is you just, you know, it hits you? What is that?
Yeah, I think it's a gut feeling for me. I don't really ponder for a long time on the poems that I write. I don't know if that comes through, but I think it probably does. Like, I don't think too much about the language. I think poetry for me is more being a way of writing down what I'm thinking about something. It's not really being a way of sort of using language very cleverly or beautifully, or I've just sort of thought of a poem and written it down. So I guess most of the time when I'm writing poems, it takes me about an hour and then I finish it and then I stop. So I wouldn't sort of spend weeks changing words and trying to, because it's just, for me, that's not the point of my poems, I guess. Whereas I like to read poetry for the person who's obviously deliberated a lot over each word to use, and each word can have a different meaning. But yeah, I'm not really like that as a writer. I've always just quickly written a poem down. Sometimes I change it, like I do edit stuff, but not that often. I edit more to do with the meaning rather than the language. Like, if I, like with mathematics, I thought actually there's a bit in it that doesn't really make sense and is a bit wrong. So I changed it, and I've had, like, one of my cousins said that one of my poems was quite rude in a way that it wasn't intended. So I sort of looked at that and changed it. So I'll change and edit more in terms of meaning than language.
But the core of the poem comes, like, as you were saying, like within an hour, huh?
Yeah. I just write a lot of poems. So it's about an hour. I'd say an average is about an hour to write down a poem that's in my head, I reckon.
You know, that's interesting that you say that, because I've heard so many people talk about this fact that it's almost like when, you know, like a lot of times when I create something, it's whether it's a song or a video or whatever it is, and the thinking isn't really involved. It's more a receiving, if you will, or getting out of the way, getting your ego out of the way, and letting that creative, you know, burst or whatever land on your doorstep. It's almost, you know, it's like you were saying, it's almost like you open the door, whatever, you know, it's like within an hour, this thing just kind of shows up in your lap or whatever. I mean, what is the creative process like for you? Is it painstaking? Is it fluid? Is it, you know, is it nose to the grindstone?
No, it's not. It's not painstaking, really. I enjoy it. I love it. I
Uh-huh.
just, yeah, I just get an idea in my head, I think. And then I think the reason that I've always written poetry is because it's a way of getting ideas sort of sorted in my head. So I'd read a whole essay of like 100 pages or something, and then I'd want to kind of cut it down and get out the main meaning behind it. So that's what poetry was for me. So I guess it's a kind of like clarifying things in my head. So a lot of the time I use it just to sort out my own ideas about things. And then if I think, oh, that's quite a nice poem, then I'll share it with other people. And if not, it's just quite a good way of doing that. So I don't really know. It's quite hard to explain how to get your poem out. It's not painstaking in any way. Like, I think that would be a real first world kind of.
Yeah.
I find it painful writing poems out, please. Seriously, that's not a painful experience.
Us poor artists.
After childbirth, poetry is really not a painful experience. I just sort of sit down, and if I've got time and space, like if I'm on my own, then I'll sit down and write it down. But to be honest, I think of poems or ideas for poems quite a lot, and I'm out with my kid, and then I think they just get lost in space. And then I sort of feel a bit sad about it for about a day, and then think, oh, come on, it's all right. Don't worry. It's not that big a deal. So if I've got a chance to sit and write it down, that's the best way, and then I can just get it out. My memory's not that great, so if I think of something and I don't write it down within sort of an hour, it tends to escape from my head forever.
Yeah, so you just mentioned motherhood. Are you a recent mother, or how old is your child?
She's four.
She's four. Okay, so
yeah.
So so now you've had some years of this. How has motherhood affected your output? I mean, not only in terms of quantity, but like what do you focus on now? You know what I mean? Has it changed your focus and your viewpoint?
Yeah, kind of. It did for a while. Like when I first became a mum, I wrote loads and loads of stuff about being a mum, because it just shocked me, the difference. Like what I thought it would be like to what it was actually like, and how difficult it was, and how hard it was, and how kind of political it was, but not talked about. Like all the issues of motherhood and maternity leave and breastfeeding or bottle feeding, or just all the marketing done towards mothers and parents and pregnant women, and just all that kind of stuff shocked me and annoyed me. So it's kind of a new thing for me to be angry about, I think. But at the same time, there was this amazing little baby in my life. So I was sort of, on the one hand, writing a lot more angry poems and really angry about it, because now, you know, the sort of marketing and stuff that I was annoyed about before, now you're targeting a baby, and I find that even more disgusting. So on the one side, there was that sort of new anger about something. And then on the other side, I had an amazing little human being that I was watching growing up. So there was a lot more, I don't know, love poetry, I guess you'd call it. I never really wrote stuff like that before, but there was a lot more kind of heartfelt poetry churning out of me. But now she's a bit older. I think it's kind of similar. It's similar to before. It hasn't changed my perspective on things that much. Mm-hmm. I think I love children a lot more now, and I think they get a really tough deal. So I write more about that, and I write more about gender, I think, because I was never sure all the arguments about whether gender is something that's imposed on people or not. And after sort of going to lots of toddler groups and baby groups and seeing people even, you know, picking a baby girl up differently from the way they pick up a baby boy, that kind of stuff, it's kind of changed my attitude towards that. So I've been writing a lot about that, and about the elections, which has got nothing to do with motherhood really, except I feel like I want to get more involved in politics now, because I've got someone else to think about more. Yeah, I've been reading a lot about our political parties. I think right now that's my main reading, and poetry writing.
So I mean, with your daughter, I mean, are you hopeful for the future? Are you hopeful for your daughter's future and things like that, with the current state of politics and the way things seem to be going in the world?
Yeah, I think, like, it's kind of hard to say, isn't it? Because I'm in a really lucky situation. I live in a country where it's not a bad place to live. In a place where, for a young girl, it's specifically not a bad place to live at all. And so I feel like if I said no, that would be ridiculous, because I hope and I think that she is going to be fine, and that at the moment it's, there's nothing to complain about. And if people do complain about stuff around me, I sort of think, come on, you know, look around at other places in the world. But I think worldwide, I'm not so sure. On a general scale, I'm not so sure. Like, more of the pressures on young kids, and I don't really know. I don't really know. That's a big question. But, yeah, I get more and more annoyed by them sectioning boys and girls off as if they're some sort of different alien species to each other. That mm-hmm. that drives me mad, and I feel like that's getting worse and worse. Like, every time I talk to someone who's older, my grandma, my mum, they say that sort of thing is getting worse, like the proper targeted advertising, splitting up girls and boys in every single aspect of their young life, really annoys me. And it, like, and I know that is a much smaller issue than kids that cannot access clean water. Obviously, that is a harder thing, and I don't have to deal with that. So, with my child, but yeah, things like that where I'm living, I find that really kind of shocking. Even like trying to buy clothes for my 4-year-old, you know, I'll go to buy summer clothes and the shorts for girls are hot pants and the shorts for boys come down to their knees. Like, little things like that I find really disturbing, and I hate it. Or recently, school shoes, like school uniform, God, taking kids out of a toddler group and now putting them in school uniform where the girls are in skirts and dresses and shoes that, you know, make your feet wet if it rains, and the boys are in like really sturdy stuff that they can go after school, go straight to the park, play in, you know, go on a climbing frame without flashing their pants to everyone, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Just seeing our genders being divided more and more, I think that's the main thing I see at the moment. Yeah, but that might be because I just spent a lot of time buying school uniform and thinking, why the hell, why are these school uniforms so different? Like, they're making girls and boys play in different ways already. Like, I don't, yeah. It just baffles me, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it seems like our modern culture is like molding these, you know, putting these molds out for the kids to go and their kids to mold into. And, you know, they're like sectioning off, as you're saying, or dividing the genders. And I mean, one of the things I always said is like, you know, real men write poetry. You know what I mean? To me, there's like, mm-hmm. for a man to be a man, it's like he has to recognize his feminine side. And I would say the same thing for the female. You know, a female has to recognize that it has that male side. And it's almost like when our whole society seems to be dividing these things and trying to put people in camps and almost a war of the sexes, if you will. And it's almost, you know, it's just really unfortunate. And I think one of the things that, I mean, for me at least, poetry, lyrics and things like that is one of the things that helped me bridge that divide. And I don't know if that's, if you've had that same experience. I mean, it sounds like you have.
Yeah, so. Totally. That's the sort of the reason why I was writing poetry, to get stuff off my chest. Like, I have been all my life, whether it's personal things, you know, about boyfriends, or whether it's, you know, bigger issues about politics, that's been really the reason that I started writing. I think it's just, my first poem was about how I was annoyed with my mum and dad when I was 7. That's always been the way of getting stuff off my chest. But I quite like the fact that it's no longer just getting it off my chest and not doing anything with it. That's what I love about things like YouTube, for all its flaws, YouTube and social media and stuff like that. The fact that instead of now writing poems to get something off my chest and keeping them under my bed, I can do something with them, however small, I guess. Because to be honest, I think everything I write about in terms of gender, in terms of childhood and breastfeeding, everything really, it kind of boils down to money, really, like making money seems to be at the source of everything I write about. You know, like dividing kids, you divide them and you sell twice as many toys, and you know, if someone's got 3 kids, they can't pass them down between male and female children and stuff. I think it just boils down to how much money you can make out of people, and making money out of kids annoys me more than trying to make money out of adults, I think.
One thing I want to get to is like where you kind of see where you're heading with this poetry. Like, when I, you know, a lot of kids, when they first pick up a guitar or whatever, it's like, there's like, hey, I'm going to change the world with one rock and roll song kind of thing. Where do you feel like poetry fits in? I mean, is this, you're doing something obviously from your heart, but I mean, is this to try to help people change people's minds, or is this just a release for you?
It was just a release. Like, it was just a release, and at the moment I'm kind of like toppling between the two. I've never really sort of poetry is something that can really change perspectives. But I, you know, get quite a lot of emails from people to say that it's very helpful, or it's made them feel better, or like a poem about breastfeeding or immigration or whatever ones. So I kind of more and more seeing that it can be quite a powerful medium and a powerful thing. Like music can, like art can, like film, cinema, anything. I think it's like with any art form, there are different types, aren't there? Some purely entertain you, some make you laugh, some make you think. I think it's the same with poetry, but I never thought that until, I guess really until the YouTube stuff went viral. I always thought it was kind of just space for me, and then the reason I put mathematics up was because someone asked if I could put it up so they could use it in their class. So it wasn't really me wanting to put stuff up to share it with the world, but that seems to have been what's happened. And yeah, I don't know. In terms of, I've never really been someone that's thought that I really want to be on stage and put a message out there. I always was more practical. Like, I was always a bit annoyed that I didn't do engineering or something like that at university, so that I could actually learn how to build things that might be helpful. And I still, going from quite a practical job in planning to doing poetry, I still sometimes think, should I do something more practical? I'd quite like to be a more practical person.
Oh, it's practicality of the heart,
but
though.
Yeah, and it's turning out that the poetry is having quite practical results, I guess, which is a really good thing. So there's a lot of organisations that I thought I would quite like to work for, which I seem to be doing that, but through poetry rather than through admin or whatever, statistics, which was the way that I thought I would maybe be working with them. So yeah, I think, but I don't think, you know, I don't know, I don't think all poetry has to be political and all poetry has to have a purpose of, like, you know, talking about political issues, or it can be beautiful, it could, you know, make people smile, it can touch people in all sorts of different ways, can't it?
Mm-hmm. So who are you influenced by as far as your writing? Who have your favorite poets been?
This is my hardest question, because I never really read lots of poetry. I was more like you, I guess, like I used to print off music lyrics and read them quite a lot. So like the Beatles' White Album, I listened to a lot and read a lot. People like Nina Simone, I read a lot of her stuff. Lauryn Hill, MC Solar, I read a lot, and then more kind of like, do you know Louise Attaque? They're like a French group, and I kind of love their style of writing. So I used to print off more song lyrics. Barry Maguire or someone, he wrote a song called Eve of Destruction, and my dad used to play that in the car, and I used to play it just on loop over and over again and listen to the words of that. So it was more song lyrics. Like the only poetry I was really into as I was growing up was kids poetry, or funny rhyming poetry really, which I guess might be why I'm slightly obsessed with rhyming still. Like, I've never written a poem that doesn't rhyme, not ever in my life. So I think like Barry McGough, Roger McGough, I used to love, and just kind of silly little poems like When Betty Eats Spaghetti, or there was a collection of poetry when I was little called Please Mrs. Butler, which I loved, and Benjamin Zephaniah I like now, but I only really got into him after I started reading my own poetry and people started recommending people that they thought I would like. I feel a bit lame saying that I don't know that much poetry. I am starting to read it now. I get friends recommending me poets that I have to read, so I'm doing it now. And to be honest, in spoken word, you see so much poetry that there's, you know, a lot of the poets I'm influenced by now are poets that I know, mm-hmm. rather than poets that are necessarily published or, you know, sort of set up in our canon of what poetry should be. So people like Kate Tempest, I really like. And then Sabrina Mafoo, Deanna Rogers, Raymond Antrobus, but they're not, you know, they've not got their books, poetry published or anything like that yet. Soon, everyone will know them.
You know, it's funny you say that you don't read a lot of poets and that a lot of it comes from music. And I think a lot of people forget that so much of music is, you know, if you strip away the music, it is poetry. Like one of my favorite.
That's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite poets, if you will, is Joni Mitchell. I mean, if you strip away the music of Joni Mitchell, you could just read her lyrics straight away, and they're beautiful. You know, there's just a rhythm mm-hmm. and a flow to them and things like that. And we were talking before about, you know, there seems to be a lot of like, you know, it was cynicism or whatever. It's like, oh, poetry, ugh, that sort of thing. But, you know, really, when you go to a rock show or you go to a folk show or whatever it is, you're it's poetry in action, really. It's just with music.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. That's what I wanted to do. Like the album that I've just finished, I really wanted to do it so that there would be two CDs, so there'd be poems on their own and music, because I didn't want to release something which just had it with the music, because loads of people just want to hear the words. So I thought, instead of having poems with music and then having the lyrics written down, I should just have all the poems in their kind of raw form and then have them again. Because I would have loved to have got like Courtney Love. I was really into when I was about 14. And I would have loved to have just heard her reading the lines without singing them, without the music. And I used to try to read them and print them off and read them, as I thought they would read them if they weren't singing or performing them in different ways. So yeah, totally. I think, yeah, that's what I meant about Abbey Road. Like, I'm the first poet to record at Abbey Road, but not really.
Yeah.
There's been loads, hundreds, thousands.
Well, you know, listening to your record too, I listened to both of them, the one with the music and then one without, and I actually preferred the one without the music. It's not, you know, I mean, I liked them both, but it was a way that you could actually like really hone in on what you were saying and really get the message, and I just liked it better, actually. So
that's really nice to hear. That's really because that's like me. I really liked that other album. It was so fun doing it. But it was a case of sending off my poems to people, and then they sort of sent it back changed. And some of them I thought, oh, wow, I love what you've done with it. And some of them I was like, oh, really? But I just wanted it to be a real mixture, so that's very nice to hear. And thanks for listening to both of them.
There's a rhythm to poetry, obviously, and so, you know, and poetry, I mean, there can be no doubt that poetry or romanticism comes from the heart, the rhythm of the heart. And to me, in order to see the beauty, like both, you know, in and out or whatever, one needs to, you know, bare their heart, right, as you're doing. And when you do this, you're open to a lot of criticisms and attacks, like you were saying, when people were, you know, mentioning against the immigration poem that you had said. And I mean, I know personally that some of those attacks can cut deep, you know, that they can really hurt. I mean, have you experienced some of this? And if so, how do you deal with the criticism?
I don't really mind. I don't mind criticism. Like, that's what I like about having all the YouTube comments on and stuff. Because at one point, people kept telling me to turn off my comments because of all the hate that was coming into them. But I quite like seeing what people are thinking. I quite like the kind of democracy of YouTube, where everyone has a say in what they're watching. And it's funny, it's not criticism, it's just quite hateful, that it was hard to deal with at first, I think.
Sure.
I don't really mind things about my appearance, because that's got nothing to do with my poetry or my family or anything, and I'm totally used to it. So, you know, every time I put up a poem that was something positive about females, like, I just know I'm going to get called like an ugly slag or whatever 100 times, and that's fine. It sort of reminds me of being at school and someone asking you out and you say no, and then them calling you an ugly lesbian. It's sort of it's like playground tactics, to be honest. The only thing that really got to me, I think, at first, was with all the immigration stuff that I was doing, which when people started actually sending me emails to say like they knew where I was going to be at a gig and they were going to turn up and like show me how much they appreciated my stance on immigration and stuff like that. That I thought, actually, that's going too far. You're like threatening to turn up and beat me up at a gig, basically. And there was one that I was not going to go to. And I had a friend sort of tell me, you can't do that because then you're letting them win and that's not fair. But I thought, you know, you're not traveling to gigs on your own, are you? And then walking back to your car late at night on your own after doing a gig. So sometimes it affected me, but I think after so many emails to tell me that I was sort of hating white people and trying to start a white genocide, it just became a bit of a, I don't know, I'm a bit more used to it now. I don't really mind so much. But, you know, in the back of my head, a bit more cautious maybe at gigs. And there was a phase when I didn't read certain poems, and then I realised I just wasn't reading them because they're the ones that people will give me hate for. So I've stopped doing that now.
That's a good move. Yeah.
Trying, you know, like I was sort of not reading mathematics as much, and I was not reading a poem called Reverse as much about sexism, and now I do the opposite and sort of read them first. maybe to try and get them out of the way because they make me the most nervous in case someone hurls something at me from the stage. But it hasn't happened yet, so hopefully.
So getting that, does that push you to try to push the boundaries a little bit, push the envelope a little bit?
Not really. Oh. I don't think. I just, to be honest, because I still just really write poems when I think about them. So I'm not really the sort of person that's going to think, oh, they've done this, so I'm going to write a poem and reply to them. And because if I sit down to just write a poem, it's not going to be very good, I don't think. I'm not very reactive like that. I would prefer to go for a walk around the park with my daughter, to be honest, than sit and start a poetry battle with people. Or I would just keep doing what I'm doing, I guess. And then like with immigration stuff, it's not just poetry. Like I do lots of conferences and I'm rereading all the stuff that I did at uni about the economics of immigration and reading up on it a lot. So as much as the poetry is serving a practical purpose, I just did a media conference with a organization that invites all the different, like CNN and Fox News and everything. So I've been invited to do the poems at places like that, which I really like, because now I'm actually learning a lot about the issues and how immigrants are depicted in the news and stuff like that. So I feel like I'm doing something practical as well as writing poems about it.
Where are you at politically? Are you left-leaning, middle, libertarian, right? Do you take a stance?
I think I'm left.
Yeah,
I reckon I'm left. Definitely, actually. My family has typically been Labour supporters, but Labour now is quite centre, so not really sure. That's kind of what I'm looking at the moment. I'm doing a lot of reading about the political classes and political issues, because I'm not really sure. Like I used to vote Labour and now they're kind of centering with the Conservatives. So yeah, I'm not sure right now. We were always, my granny's always told me that we're Labour voters because two of my great grandfathers died in the mines. So that was it. But now the politics is moving a little bit more. I don't think that's such a good thing to base it on. No. So yeah, I'm not sure. UK politics at the moment is a bit tricky, I guess, like every other country in the world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I just, to be honest, what I would really like is for people to actually vote. That would be my main concern, for people to actually get out and vote.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned, I know you have I think the poem is called My Grandma's. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
So yeah. I know you mentioned before about your father playing a poem and things like that. I know from, my own experience that the unequivocal support of my family has been like one of the most indispensable factors in my own success in life. And what I mean by success is like taking whatever road I had or I needed to find me, they were always supportive of that journey. I mean, have you had support from your family in that realm?
Yeah, they're amazing. My family are amazing. Totally. Like they're all very, not that, it's not that they would say, oh, I think these poems are amazing, anything like that. Mm-hmm. And my mum has listened to my poems since I was about 8 years old. Like, she's the only one that I ever read them to. And she's listened to me drivel on in rhyme, as she says it, for most of my life. Because she was the only one that I would ever read them to. And they've been really supportive, because I haven't really known what I've wanted to do. And I've sort of been changing subjects at uni and then, I don't know, yeah, I don't think I could have done anything without them, really. And there's not just my mum and dad, my brother and extended family up in Scotland. I don't talk about the poetry a lot, and I find it more embarrassing to read it to my family than anyone else. like, I've got a gig in Glasgow coming up, and all my family are from Glasgow. So there's about 7 people in my family, like cousins and aunties mainly, that have booked tickets for the gig, and I'm totally dreading it. Because they're really supportive, but it's also really embarrassing. A bit of both. And like when mathematics went viral on YouTube, my mum just said, I don't really understand. It's not one of your best, is it? I think it's just because it's quite short. So it's good. It's supportive, but not in the like, oh, aren't you fantastic way. Yeah. Which I think is the best type of honest support you can get from your family.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so your parents didn't freak out or anything. It was like, all right, I'm quitting my corporate job. Now I'm going to read poetry. And they're like, what? What are you doing? You know, how are you going to support you? You know, that they didn't have any
No,
problems.
to be honest, I think they quite liked it because my job was for a charity. So
Oh.
it was quite, rather than being corporate, it was like a architecture center working with young people, and it
Oh,
relied
okay.
on funding streams. And so that was, it was quite, I don't know what the word is, precarious, I guess, as to each season whether we would get more funding to do it and stuff. So actually, there's not been much difference between that job and freelancing. It's still kind of a case of, waiting to see if you've got to get funding for something, or waiting to see if you're going to get booked for gigs.
So wait a
So I
minute,
think,
you're telling me that there's more stability in being a poet?
to be honest, there's not that much less. And I only quit my job once I was earning enough from poetry to quit the job. So I know a lot of people do the opposite, and they
Just
quit
go for it.
everything and go to do it. Whereas, like, I had a kid, it was kind of different. I had a kid and a lot of rent, which I know a lot of people do, but quite a lot of people that I knew, they didn't have any children or a partner, and they were living at home, so there was much less kind of income that you needed. Whereas, yeah, I kind of tried to do the poetry and started off a workshop organization to do workshops in schools and stuff while I was still working part time at my job. So there, yeah. So yeah, basically there is kind of more stability than working in the charity sector in England once the Conservatives got into power. I think that was a big decider. The Conservatives got in, so there was much less funding for kind of youth initiatives and stuff.
Do you ever experience writer's block?
I don't really know, because I only really write when I have a poem in my head. So
That's a great answer.
I don't really know if I don't know if I'd know if I had writer's block. Maybe I have writer's block all the time. If you get what I mean. If
Oh,
that makes sense. So
that's
I've
funny.
never sat down and thought, today I'm going to write a poem. Like, I've never done that. And maybe if I did, then I'd sit down and think, today I'm going to write a poem. Nope, I'm not. I feel
And
like
now
I have to
I
do
have
it.
writer's block.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that, and then I'll answer your question again next week. So no, I don't think I've ever had writer's block. I don't think.
You know, that's great that you're saying that, because I mean, to me, I feel like you know, inspiration comes from the quest of being an inspired person, if you will. You know, like I mean,
Yeah.
in that poem, The Bricks, you say, I mean, you're inspired by the simple touching of a wall. I mean, the poem starts off, if I will, here, I have it here. Bricks turn me on sometimes. I don't know why. It is just something. When nobody is watching, sometimes I rub them. The roughness is lovely. I feel a bit funny even writing this down, but I love it. It's just a simple act and such a simple focus of consciousness, if you will, on can unleash this beauty. I mean, how do you stay inspired? How does one continue to find beauty in such, you know, everyday commonplace events?
I don't think it's that hard. I think the world is bloody amazing. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
I just, like, I don't know, even, like, I live in a flat and we've got a shared garden, and even, like, corn on the cob growing in my garden I find quite amazing. And then, I don't know. I'm quite baffled by everything. I think it's probably my mum that's set that up in me. She's a nurse, so every day she deals with people that are ill and people that die. And she just said, like, life is too short. Like, we've got it really good here. Like, just look outside. Like, go and look outside. Go into the forest. Like, spend time with your child. Spend time with whoever. Like, people. I don't know. My mum's kind of fascinated by everything, and every day has to work with very sick people. So I think if you've got a job like that, you kind of realize how lucky you are and how brilliant things are when they are brilliant. Because I hate a lot of stuff in this world, don't get me wrong. I think I'm on a kind of half and half thing. But the things that I'm amazed by, there's inspiration everywhere, really, isn't there? Not so much in the shops, but more like in the garden or in people that are around you. We can actually take the time to talk, listen. Yeah, and seeing a kid, I guess being with a kid, like they're amazed by stuff that you should be amazed by, but we're sort of not anymore. So. No, tomatoes actually growing from a seed in the garden. My daughter was jumping around like besotted with shoving all the tomatoes in her garden pot. in the garden. I think, actually, yeah, that is amazing. Like, why have I stopped being amazed by things like that? And it's good. It's cheap. It's cheap if you can be amazed by a tomato plant growing in your shared garden.
Yeah, it reminds me of that the Henry Miller quote is the one I always love. It says, the moment one gives close attention to anything, even a blade of grass, it becomes a mysterious, awesome, indescribable, magnificent world in and of itself. I just love that.
Totally true.
Yeah, you know, it's just simple focus of your consciousness can really bring out the beauty. You know, you had mentioned one of our interactions online that you don't do too much social media. Do you feel like social media is like dehumanizing people or making people into walking zombies just staring at their phones all day?
I don't know. I just get bored of it.
Sure.
I think that's why I don't do it that much. Like, yeah, I try, and then I got told off quite a lot by people that I work with. For, you know, I go on Twitter and I'll like post information about a gig, and then come off Twitter again, and they say, you know, if you want to use social media, you've got to, you know, use it as a networking tool, and don't just write stuff about your gigs. And I was like, but I don't want that to be my networking tool. And like, I'll phone up my friend and meet her at the pub. for my networking tool, you know. I like it in a lot of ways. Like, there's a lot of people that I keep in touch with that I wouldn't otherwise. Mm-hmm. But I just, yeah, I think I'm more on the side of like walking around the park rather than like playing Farms on the computer. I've never really been that into computer games and stuff like that, I don't think. So
you'd rather be planting in your garden?
I'm not
than playing
Farmville.
No,
I wouldn't rather be planting. To be honest, my garden is about a meter by a meter. Like, we've each got a tiny bit in this shared garden in the flat. So if I spent all day planting, I don't know where I would plant stuff. But I just like being outside, really. I like being outside and actually looking at things. But I find the internet quite fascinating. I'm not totally against it. I'm not, you know, anti Facebook. Or anti-Twitter, and I read quite a lot on Twitter. I like to see what people are doing each day. I think it's a cool way of staying in touch. It's just when it takes over. I think last year I was on Twitter quite a lot because I was new, and I thought, okay, I should use this. And then I was sat on the train to Scotland, like, to go and visit my family, and I started thinking of tweets. Like, I was looking outside and I thought, oh, isn't that a beautiful view? And then I started thinking about stuff in tweets, and I thought, oh my God, I need to get off Twitter. I'm sort of thinking about the world in 140 characters. So then I sort of thought I'd leave it a little bit.
Yeah, that's funny. Instead of looking out and thinking of the tweet, just look out and enjoy it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Instead of going out with your friends and like waiting to see what pictures you can put up to show everyone else how bloody amazing your life is, like just enjoy the night and then go home and... and have a hangover the next day. Don't worry about uploading all the photos to show everyone else. I don't know. I don't like that posing aspect. You know, look how great my life is. Look how shit yours is. It's kind of, you know, some people I go up and I think, oh, God, you're doing loads of stuff with your kids and you're doing all this and oh. And then I think, actually, so are you, Holly. It's just, you know, you haven't put the pictures of it up, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah. So we only got a few minutes here yet. I just wanted to kind of wrap it up here. What has been the biggest challenges in your life thus far?
Totally trying to balance having a child and working.
Uh-huh.
That's it. I just don't really know how any parents do it. It's such a slog and you don't get any sleep. I think that's been the biggest challenge. But, like, trying to work and try to earn money and try to spend time with your child and try to work everything out at the same time, especially for a job that involves a lot of traveling. So that was hard. That's been the biggest challenge. I think the lack of sleep for the last 4 years has been the biggest challenge I've ever had in my life. that's the main thing. And I thought getting on stage and reading poems to people, but compared to balancing parenthood and work and not Yeah, that's it. That's the main thing. Yeah. I'd be lying if I said anything else. That is the hardest thing.
So you're on tour right now. After the tour, where are you headed with all this? Are you going to do more workshops? Is that what you plan on doing? Or are you looking at making another record? I mean, I know you just released this one. It's might, you know, I don't know.
You know. Yeah, after the tour, I'm doing a big project about women in football. Like, I play football a lot. And then a theatre approached me to see if I'd write some kind of monologues for the actors in this play about women in football and how the FA sort of bugged up women's football team. So I'm looking into that at the moment, and I'm also working with an agent to try and get published my diaries of parenthood from being about 3 months pregnant up until my daughter being about two. I've written all my diaries, so it's all written in poems. And so I've just sort of finished putting them all together and finding the right date and putting them in order. So that's faster. But I don't really know, because I don't know if the album will be popular or not. Mm-hmm. So it just depends, really. Yeah, it just depends. So yeah, I've got that, and I've done a sort of set of 10 kids stories in poems. So maybe try and edit them and work on them a bit more. Anything really?
just whatever comes down the pipe, huh?
Yeah, whatever. That's what I quite like about freelancing. And also, you know, I don't genuinely do not know if people like the album or not. So if they don't, and I don't get any more gigs, then I'll concentrate on the other stuff. And if they do, and I get a lot more gigs, and you know, then I'll put that aside for another year, I guess.
Nice. Well, I mean, I personally, I love the album. I love your poetry. Like I said, I think I've shared Touch and Embarrassed and so many of them, because I've watched them several times.
Aww,
so I really love them. So,
thank you.
Yeah, I just a big fan. So, do you want to let people know?
Thanks very much.
Yeah, where they can see you live and where to get your record and your website and that sort of thing.
Yes, I think the best thing is just to go to my website, because all the links are from there. So it's hollypoetry.com, and it's hollielie.com.
Okay, great. So, yeah, that's about going to do it for this time. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I wish you all the best in the future, and I hope you have a great tour and all of that, and I hope you do well with your record. Mm. So, and if people out there, if you're listening, please pick it up. It's wonderful. And
yeah, please pick it up.
Yeah. So, wish you so much success and happiness in your future, and keep on keeping on, Holly.
Thanks. Thank you. And thanks so much for getting in touch. I know it was... because I'm not very good on Twitter and stuff. It was really, really nice.
Oh, cool. No, it's my pleasure. I appreciate
people. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time. Yeah, maybe we'll talk again in the future.
Yeah, lovely. Love to. All right.
All right. Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Our outro song is called Circles and is off the record ING and is provided by the Portland, Oregon band Otis Heat. My old band got a chance to open up for these guys in Portland a few years back, and they just killed it. They play a great live show. They have this huge sound for a three-piece, and they have these just funky, infectious grooves that will make you shake your booty all night. Otis Heat is currently on tour, and you can check out their tour dates, their records, and everything else Otis Heat at www.otisheat.com. Coming up in the next few episodes of the Marty Leeds Math Magical Radio Hour include interviews with Andy Laub and Ian Mangiardi of As It Happens TV. These guys hiked the Pacific Crest Trail, and they made this great documentary about the journey. And we will also be hearing from the author of China's Cosmological Prehistory, Laird Scranton. Be sure to stay tuned, and always remember, an opinion without pie is just an onion. Thanks. See the road below the snow.
never know what I postpone. My road is turned to stone. I might never know what I postpone. My lust is turned to dust, just like the snow upon the road. I might never know what I postpone. Looking at my back as I walk around in circles, stepping in my tracks. As I walk around in circles.
Been listening to the Marty Leeds Mathmagical Radio Hour. More information about the work of Marty Leeds can be found at MartyLeeds33.com. You can download his full-length studio record, Opus Medico Musica, from iTunes or Amazon.com, and be sure and check out his books, Pi and the English Alphabet, Volume 1 and 2, and The Peacock's Tales, available at MartyLeeds33.com and Amazon. For hours of free video, check out his YouTube channel at MartyLeeds33. More information about SyncBook Press, SyncBook Radio, or SyncBook Events can be found at thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast, please support it by becoming a donor. You'll find the donation links under each episode on the website and consider setting up a monthly charge. Thanks so much, and though some people think it's a piece of cake, we all know it's easy as pie.